This is Kathy coming to you with the News Gazette for the 1st of May. And our top headline today says, Chief Metzler planning to retire at September's end, by Dave Hinton. Police Chief Mike Metzler is set to step down September 30th from the position he has held for 14 years. The village has contracted with Arndt Municipal Support Incorporated, a recruiting service out of Charleston, to find his successor. A 46-year law enforcement officer, Metzler joined the Mahomet Police on September 26, 2011. He said that serving the community, the village board, and the staff of the Mahomet Police Department has been an honor of a lifetime. The level of support we have received from the Board of Trustees, village president, village administration, and people of Mahomet has been overwhelming and humbling, he said. Metzler cited working with the administration and Board of Trustees to prioritize expanding staffing needs and addressing the growing village population and increased activity as accomplishments during his tenure. During his time, the department has added in-car cameras and body cameras and integrated a system of advanced license plate readers. The department has been the only one in Champaign County to adopt an integrated system for electronic citations and accident reports. All officers are now issued laptops and cell phones with which they stay connected to dispatch and can upload evidence directly to a cloud server. Village Administrator Patrick Brown, who has worked closely with Metzger since the latter's 2011 hiring, said he believed Metzler was the right person for the job to navigate the growth and challenges faced by the community. The department was at a crossroads and needed to transition from the mindset of a very small department to one that embraced new technology, enhanced training, and could meet the ever-changing needs of the community, Brown said. Village President Jason Tompkins also had praise for Metzler. Chief Metzler has had a decorated career serving the law enforcement community for more than four decades, and we have had the great fortune of having Mike's leadership for the past 14 years as our police chief, he said. During his tenure, Chief Metzler has been a true leader, advancing the department both with top-notch personnel and technology to address the ever-changing needs of the community. Metzler said he is very proud of the staff we have assembled over the years. I will miss all of them, he said. And from the Champaign County Courts, alleged provider of weapon used in murder convicted, by Luke Taylor. A Champaign man has been found guilty of giving a gun to someone who was convicted of a felony. That gun was used in a murder. On April 10, 2021, police found bullet casings at the scene of Aaron Jameson's murder in North Champaign. Mr. Jameson was one of the three victims killed in three separate shooting incidents that weekend. Police determined the bullet casings matched a gun that was found later in Chicago and linked to a convicted felon. The gun was originally purchased by Gregory Campbell, 55, of Champaign, in late March of 2021. He reported it stolen from his vehicle 2 months later, weeks after the shooting, but investigators don't believe he had any involvement in the shooting itself. In Campbell's trial, which began Monday and concluded Wednesday, Assistant State's Attorney Joel Fletcher brought police officers involved in the case as witnesses, in addition to Campbell's stepson, Roger Brown. The stepson is currently awaiting sentencing in a federal case in which he pleaded guilty to distribution of 50 grams or more of methamphetamine. During the interviews with police regarding his own case, Brown said more than once that despite being a felon, he obtained firearms from his stepfather, that others did as well. In court Tuesday, he told a different story, repeatedly telling Fletcher that he did not say or did not remember saying many previous statements, despite some being recorded. Others written in an affidavit that he'd signed and others made before a grand jury. In some of those previous statements, Brown explained that Campbell gave them the guns in order to protect themselves because they felt threatened by other people in the area. He ain't do us, but try to help us, Brown told a police officer. He ain't do us, but what a dad should do. Jeff Sisco, Campbell's lawyer, suggested that Brown may have made many of these previous statements with the intention of getting a lighter sentence in his own case by being cooperative. Brown agreed that he had personal motivations that did not include that was the truth to say his stepfather gave him at least one firearm. In his closing arguments, Fletcher highlighted texts between Brown and others referring to Campbell as a reliable source for firearms. He also pointed out where Campbell delayed reporting more than one firearm as missing or stolen until after that firearm was found by police. Sisco said that in general he did not find Brown to be a credible witness and pointed out that he must have been either lying in court during his trial or lying to police and a different jury previously. Campbell also had been charged with unlawful purchase of a firearm and unlawful purchase of a firearm on two or more occasions. Both charges allege that he purchased the various guns with the express purpose of giving them to individuals he knew were not allowed to have them. Fletcher and Sisko debated whether Campbell would have known his stepson and others close to him had felony convictions, but the jury ultimately found him not guilty of those charges. Campbell is scheduled for a June sentencing hearing for unlawful delivery of a firearm, and one charge of which he was found guilty. This is under the headline, First Look, Champaign Public Library, Branching Out. Grand opening for Makerspace, a Douglas site set for Saturday by Jana Wiersma. Whether it's recording podcasts, creating customized mugs, or 3D printing figurines, a new space inside the Champaign Public Library Douglas's branch will offer the community a variety of ways to get creative. The branch, located at 504 East Grove Street, will hold a grand opening for the Makerspace from noon to 3 p.m. Saturday. The event will include tours, demonstrations, giveaways, and light refreshments. The Makerspace is open to anyone who's in the community, said Douglas Branch Manager Thea Green. It's a space for all ages to come in and utilize the tools that we have. The facility was created with the intention of mimicking the existing Makerspace at the main branch, she said. The Douglas Branch Makerspace features a recording booth and equipment, a 3D printer, a laser cutter, sewing machines, a cri-cut cutter, a hat press, a heat press, and a mug press. It's located in a 315-square-foot space that was previously a kitchenette and storage area and is connected to the meeting room, with features gaming and virtual reality stations, Green said. According to library staff, the Makerspace will host open hours for all ages from noon to 3 p.m. on the first and third Saturdays of each month. There will also be evening workshops for adults on the third Wednesday of each month, with these sessions demonstrating how to use different Makerspace equipment. Green noted that the space also will play host to other programs, including book-a-librarian appointments, after-school activities, and adult programs such as yarn and shenanigans, and coffee and a craft. Equipment reservations are encouraged, but not required for open hours, she said. The equipment is free to use, but there are fees if patrons wish to purchase materials from the library for their crafts. Alternatively, patrons can bring in their own materials, provided these are approved for the equipment they plan to use. The library will provide all materials during workshops, staff said. More information is available at champaign.org/makerspace. According to the library staff, the Makerspace's creation was made possible by funds from the Friends of the Library Foundation, and a $50,000 grant from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Green said the library hopes the space will serve as a creative outlet for the community to make products and be happy with what they make. And the top of the morning article, Something to Get You Going Today, by Vice President Jim Rossell. The main attraction at tonight's sold-out and supercharged Power of the Purse party can be traced to James Barham's introduction to Sue Gray many years ago. At the time, with the Champaign Park District, Gray convinced Barham to volunteer. That triggered a philanthropic friendship that saw Barham quarterback a slew of noteworthy community projects, from Hessel Park's playground to the Virginia Theater's reboot to Champaign's first skate park. When Gray shifted to president, CEO of United Way of Champaign County, Barham followed suit. Barham Benefit Group has donated the premier purse at each Power of the Purse. Last year's $1,500 thing of beauty fetching $2,400 of the $131,500 raised that night to provide, among many other things, scholarships for women to attend Parkland College. The power of friendships of like-minded community people is incredible, Barham said. Coming Friday and in an upcoming On the Town feature, photos from Pear Tree Estate. This headline, Boomerang's Bar and Grill, Urbana Business Back on the Market, by Jana Wiersma. A popular neighborhood bar that has had several recent ownership changes is once again on the market. Donna Graham, owner of Boomerang's Bar and Grill, said she's looking for someone to buy the business and take over her lease, and the building is for sale separately by the owner. I have decided not to renew for personal reasons that don't have anything to do with the bar, Graham said. The space is a very nice setup for a music venue or a restaurant. Great local establishment, has been around for many years. The space has been very nice set up. She added that it would be ideal if she could find someone to take over the business before her lease ends in July. The property itself, located at 1309 East Washington Street, is listed with Littlefield Group, Keller Williams Realty, the real estate center of Illinois, with a current asking price of just under $500,000. Boomerangs previously closed briefly in mid-August to restructure, reorganize, and update our business. It then reopened a few days later. Then co-owner Stuart Candlin said much of the restructuring involved our debts and liquidating overstock to free up operating capital. The bar later announced that October 5th would be its final day of business, but that closure once again turned out to be temporary, with Graham buying it and reopening it in November. "I feel that I could thrive with the right person with lots of ambition and fresh ideas," she told the News Gazette. And from Vermilion County, more first graders put to test in the math challenge by Jennifer Bailey. Almost 100 Vermilion County first graders tested their brains on math skills with addition, subtraction, even and odd numbers, fractions, and probability questions at the Danville School District 118 First Grade Math Challenge at Danville High School on Wednesday. Bismarck-Henning students Josie Scales 7, Eli Creed 7, and Camden Hogan 6 were busy figuring out the math equations and solving posed questions, with Bismarck-Henning Rossville Alvin High School senior Cole Crawley guiding them through each page of questions. Skate said the questions were easy and they were having fun. Mark Denman Elementary School student Jeremiah Denson was trying to figure out a fraction answer to the question. First graders at Salt Fork Elementary celebrated the end of the year with cake. The picture to the left represents the cake that has been eaten. The shaded portion is the amount of cake left over. Identify the fraction of the cake that is represented in the shaded portion and explain your answer. Danville High School senior Cora Helfrich assisted Denson, who was really studying the picture, about how many pieces of the cake there were in total and how many were shaded to figure out the fraction. He had to determine what numbers went on top and on the bottom. This is the 12th challenge, with it taking a break for COVID-19. It was started by teacher Renee Pate, with four teams from Danville School District 118 Southwest and Cannon Elementary Schools. This year's event saw 33 teams in teams of three. The students represented each of Danville's six elementary schools, in addition to Bismarck, Salt Fork North and South, Hoopston, and Georgetown. Family and supporters also filled the high school's gym's bleachers, cheering on the students. Angela Wilson, Danville K-12 math coach, said the math challenge started when Pate was diving into math topics and new math knowledge with standards coming out. "It's still 10 questions. That hasn't changed," Wilson said. The challenge grew a little bit and went to Danville Area Community College. Then it involved the advanced placement students at the high school. Last year, a couple county schools also joined in, and five county schools took part this year. This is the largest group they've had participating. "We have grown, and it's so cool to see everybody," Wilson said. "We have 40-plus AP high school students, which is the most we've ever needed. Some high school students from the county also came to help. It's really been a team effort. Every school stepped in. They've been practicing and working hard," Wilson said. The students were there for about an hour and a half, with medals presented, including for championship levels. The students also enjoyed a treat with their families before returning back to their schools. Wilson said it's an honor for the students to be there, and she's glad to see so many family members were there to support them. And now from Harrison Park West, "Construction Begins on a New Trail System" by Jennifer Bailey. Several years in the making, the Vermilion County Trail Alliance announced construction has finally started on a now multi-use trail system on Harrison Park West. Phase one of the project kicked off Friday and is scheduled to be complete within the next few weeks. Key stakeholders and interested community members are encouraged to attend an informal soft open and site tour at 2 p.m. Sunday, conditions permitting. Sunday's event will celebrate the completion of the first trail liftoff. Key stakeholders and interested community members are encouraged to attend the soft site tour. The site is located at 19149 Woodbury Hill Road, adjacent to Harrison Park Golf Course and the North Fork River. Vermilion County Trail Alliance President Drew Landis said the trail is a bike-optimized gravity flow trail classed at a blue level, known in mountain biking circles to mean a trail designed for intermediate and above riders. Phase 1 also includes a similarly themed green trail designed for everyone, as well as climbing trails back to the start so riders can loop the several features and jumps being installed. Landis said that volunteers also have constructed a scenic 1 mile loop that hits all the highlights as it traverses the entire property. That trail can either be hiked or ridden. The new trail system will feature a variety of trail options, many specially designed for mountain biking by world-class professional designer Jeremy Wittick and his trail company, Global Action Sports Solutions, also known as GAS. Wittick has designed several high-profile professional courses, including Red Bull Rampage, among others. "I wouldn't have believed you if you told me when I first started cooking this project up almost 15 years ago now that we'd end up delivering something of this quality for Danville and Vermilion County," Landis said. Landis has continued to talk about the trails being just one piece of a much larger puzzle that VICTA envisions for Vermilion County. In July of 2022, the nonprofit received approval from the Danville City Council to develop a 5-mile multi-use trail on city-owned land on the west side of Harrison Park. The group wants to develop a destination of hiking and biking trails on about 80 acres that formerly housed a Girl Scout camp. The bike park will be spread out through the woods with fun jumps and challenges, organizers have said. "This is just the beginning. Phase one is all about hype, building excitement and showing people what's possible if you think big," Landis said. Wittick said he's seen projects like this transform communities and become a new source of economic development, excitement, and pride. Landis agrees, saying, "I'm a big proponent of looking and moving forward, and I feel like Vermilion County has spent a lot of years looking in the rear view. This is our way of putting our money where our mouth is to get people looking ahead instead of behind." He can't wait for the opportunity to help introduce cycling programs as a part of the local school's competitive sports offerings. "Cycling, mountain biking, they're becoming a big-time competitive sports that a lot of people don't know about. There can be a bit of a barrier for entry for some kids, though, and we'd love to help remove some of that," Landis said. "My hope is we start sending local kids to college on cycling scholarships someday soon, like has already started to happen in places across the country. Drawing in tourists and sending local kids off to school? I really can't think of a better way to change the narrative in Vermilion County than doing stuff just like this." And this is an opinion column by Jim Day. J.B. Pritzker makes a big splash in New Hampshire. Not everyone is talking, but there are enough to please Governor J.B. Pritzker. He traveled last weekend to the first-in-the-nation presidential primary state of New Hampshire to give a speech that turned out for good reason to be a smash hit. His vituperation at a Democratic fundraiser represented a masterpiece of political invective that drew national attention to his budding 2028 presidential campaign. According to the New York Times, Pritzker had his audience ready to storm the barricades in opposition to President Donald Trump and despicable Republicans. He called for mass protests, for mobilizations, and for disruptions, and urged Democrats not to let Republicans know a moment of peace. "We will never join so many Republicans in the special place in hell reserved for quislings and cowards," he said. The use of quisling being an undisguised reference to Republicans as Adolf Hitler equivalents. Those not exposed to Pritzker's strident tone were taken aback, but his aggressive rhetoric is nothing new. He routinely fires both barrels at critics or entities he considers competitors. When some counties began talking about seceding from Illinois to join Indiana, Pritzker characterized Hoosierland as a low-wage state that doesn't protect its workers and is not attractive to anybody. The governor also likes to castigate super-minority, super-powerless GOP legislators in Springfield, even though they're so low in political influence they probably have to get Democrats' permission to scratch their own backsides. Clearly gifted when it comes to skewering his opposition, he obviously enjoys it. So he's using that talent to establish a reputation as Trump's number one Democratic foe as a means of winning the party's 2028 presidential nomination. That's why he also used his speech to demean unidentified Democratic rivals as do-nothings for not more vigorously opposing Trump. The Times suggested he was referring to California Governor Gavin Newsom. But that also looks over another Democrat, one Pritzker hailed just a week ago. Before characterizing retiring Illinois U.S. Senator Richard Durbin as a model legislator, the governor had castigated him for not joining the effort to shut down the federal government as part of a budget standoff with Trump. The governor was joined in that calumny by Durbin's fellow Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth. So far, Pritzker's speechifying has drawn praise for its effectiveness. Enraptured reporters contend that Pritzker is wearing the triple crown in Democratic politics as one of the party's most prominent elected officials, most generous donors, and most talked about 2028 presidential prospects. The governor might enjoy reading that exuberance, but he'd be naive to believe it. This country is just 100-plus days into Trump's 4-year term, and is always the case, the future is up for grabs. The reality is that the best thing going for the Democratic Party is the Republican Party, and vice versa. What might entail is impossible to say. Throwing rhetorical red meat to a partisan crowd may draw applause, but real people who live in the real world don't think about politics 24 hours a day. They're too busy addressing the challenges of daily life. Nonetheless, Pritzker is making his presence felt, and he has his multi-billion-dollar family fortune to drive his message home. For now, that boils down to preaching to the choir. This was written by Jim Day, who is a staff writer for the News Gazette, and this was an opinion piece. Now on page 5, to remember those who died. Rantoul Deputy Chief Christina Riefsteck participates in the March of the Living in Poland 80 years after the liberation of Auschwitz. By Dave Hinton. A local law enforcement official was among a delegation from 3 continents who participated in last week's International March of the Living in Poland, commemorating Holocaust Remembrance Day and the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz concentration camp. On April 24th, Rantoul Police Deputy Chief Christina Riefsteck joined more than 60 leaders in law enforcement from the United States, the United Kingdom, and Africa, as well as 80 Holocaust survivors and families of Holocaust victims, to take part in the march from Auschwitz to the Birkenau extermination camp. The whole concept is to remember those who died during the Holocaust and to keep bringing awareness so we won't repeat that, Riefsteck said. She recently completed a master's degree online from the University of Virginia. Late last year, we started Operation Never Again, Riefsteck said. The whole concept behind the class was to look at the police battalions of the Third Reich and the role they played in that genocide, and how we, as current and contemporary leaders, need to reflect on that, never to be a part of that bystandership. The observance was a joint program by the Rutgers University Miller Center and the University of Virginia Center for Public Safety and Justice. Riefsteck said she feels strongly that the world should never forget the Holocaust, which resulted in the deaths of 11 million people, including 6 million Jews. For me, it was profoundly impactful, Riefsteck said. It's just made me more aware of my responsibilities to the very little patch of earth that I get to cover in this part of Illinois. Riefsteck received a scholarship to take part in the program, for which she said she feels honored. I lack the language to say how grateful and humble and thankful I am for it, she said. Riefsteck, whose maiden name is Bojanowski, is of Polish heritage, her father's side being full Polish. We discovered where my grandma went to the university, Riefsteck said. During the walk, participants were able to place paddles containing meaningful statements beside the railroad tracks that brought people to the camps. Riefsteck said Bojanowski, Riefsteck family, New York and Illinois, Rantoul Police Department, Illinois, we will not forget 2025. Riefsteck also saw the Jewish ghetto in Krakow and visited the Polish capital, Warsaw, where part of the ghetto has been preserved. We happened to show up on the 82nd anniversary of the Jewish uprising, she said. We went to the tomb where many Jewish people were killed. This was the people who said, we're not going to stand here and take this anymore. We just need to rise up. Riefsteck said that during her one tour of the city, a woman opened her window and told participants, it never happened. During an opening ceremony, those attending were reminded that the world is seeing more anti-Semitism in recent years. The UN ambassador to Israel spoke at the event and had an uncomfortable conversation, Riefsteck said. He said the world stayed silent during the Holocaust. When October 7th happened, the world stayed silent again, referring to the 2023 attack by Hamas militants in Israel that resulted in more than 1,200 deaths and several hundred others being taken hostage and precipitated the ongoing war in the Gaza Strip. The comment provided a stunned silence. Those who took part in March for the Living included Rantoul Police Deputy Chief Christina Riefsteck. And this picture, they're standing beside one of the dorms at the Auschwitz concentration camp in Poland. In the Urbana Park District, new executive director hired away from Macomb by Jana Wersma. The Urbana Park District has announced the hiring of Macomb Park District Executive Director Rachel Lenz to succeed its retiring director, Tim Bartlett, effective May 21st. I'm thrilled to be joining the Urbana Park District, a community where the words, "You belong here," are lived out with heart and purpose, Lenz said. This belief that every person has a place and a voice here is something I hold close and am committed to advancing. Lenz has led the Macomb Park District since 2011. She holds a master's degree in recreation, parks, and tourism administration and is also an NCAA Women's College basketball official. Bartlett has served the Urbana Park District Executive Director since 2014 and recently announced plans to retire after 33 years with the district. I am grateful for the leadership and the impact Tim Bartlett has brought to this district, and I look forward to building on that strong foundation, Lenz said. A warm welcome. Unity High School celebrated current students and alumni last week. On Thursday, 21 students were inducted into the National Honor Society. The Rockets also proudly welcomed Mala Benedict Thapar into the Alumni Hall of Fame, a 2004 graduate. She was a two-term student council president, a National Honor Society member, and a four-year varsity athlete in cross country and track. She earned a degree in biology with a minor in theology from St. Louis University in 2008, followed by a master's in public health with a focus in epidemiology and behavioral science health education. At the American Academy of Pediatrics, she dedicated 12 years to advancing programs in pediatric obesity prevention, child health policy, and advocacy. In 2022, she launched her own healthcare consulting firm, Thapar Consulting, LLC. Today, she lives in Hinsdale with her husband, Nitin, and their children, Neam and Rihanna. From Sullivan, seniors and their scrapbooks. Cami Badman's dual-credit English composition class completed their senior scrapbooks, which included things like a timeline of their life, a section on family, a college essay, resume, and a letter from a parent. Students also made a slideshow about their high school journey and a speech on three important memories in high school. They will present specific predetermined parts of their scrapbook, their high school journey slideshow, and their speech, and that was written by Isabel Donovan. From ALAH, seniors will head to Washington, D.C. on the 70th annual trip, excluding the COVID-19 year. The students will depart from the high school at 5:30 a.m. Saturday and return late Thursday. On the trip, the class will visit the U.S. Capitol Building, the White House, and the Vietnam Memorial, and go on a Segway tour throughout the city. The class is excited to attend and then come back for prom. And there is a picture here of the 1991 seniors, including my dad, on their trip by Addison. On Snapchat, Addison Yackel's takeover for this year's senior trip to D.C. begins bright and early Saturday morning and continues as the Knights make their way east, including a stop in Pittsburgh for a Pirates game. And let's see, Westville. On Friday, the class of 2026 spent the day decorating for prom and promenade. The junior class worked very hard and had a great time preparing for prom. Thank you to all the teachers who helped make this possible. By Olivia Troglia. And at Iroquois West, FFA students traveled to Crescent City Grade School to talk about safety at their camp. 911. Members discussed important topics such as blind spots, awareness while driving next to tractors, and PTO safety. And that was submitted by Trey Kissick. And in the Hoopston area, last Wednesday, anatomy and forensic students joined teacher Adam Elliott on a trip to Danville Area Community College to attend its cadaver lab, led by Amanda Poffenbarger. They got to interact with an interactive automage table with help from Kelly Johnson. A successful learning day ended with a delicious lunch at Culverd. And that's all we have time for today, but we will be back with the second half in about 2 minutes.